Tuesday, everybody, and welcome back to the Fenway Rundown Mass Lives Red Sox podcast. I'm Chris Cotillo, your host, and we're going to be joined by Chris Smith today, my co-beat writer at Mass Live, just to kind of catch up on where things are with the Red Sox. It's obviously been a rough couple of weeks, really a rough start to the season, and so we just kind of want to get into it, give you our thoughts on, you know, what we've seen, what we expect from this team moving forward. So let's just talk about the numbers for a second. 3-7 on the road trip, 9-14 on the season as we sit here on Tuesday morning, 8 games back of the Yankees. And I'll just ask you straight up, Chris Smith, is this team screwed or do they have a chance?
I feel like they're screwed. But then you also think like, oh, well, they have James Paxton and Chris Sale coming back. And James Paxton, you know, told me that he'd like to be back at the end of June. And you can see Chris Sale maybe back at the beginning of next month. And so I don't know. I mean, I think Josh Taylor will help out the bullpen, and the bullpen's been an issue because Whitlock's been in the starting rotation. And so, but I guess he was just pulled off of his rehab today. So I think he has to sit down for a few more days before he can restart a new rehab. So, yeah, I mean, the offense is dreadful. They have no production right now from the right field and the first base positions.
Or catcher or center field.
I mean, I don't know how you could just DFA Jackie Bradley after you traded for him, even though he wasn't really the centerpiece in the trade. You know, the two prospects were, but it's difficult to do, right? Like, you know, you just traded him in the Hunter Renfro trade. You can't really DFA him, but
yeah, not yet.
That, you know, I think there's options if they want to move on, you know, or if they want him to be the fourth outfielder. I mean, you've got Jaron Duran. We'll see. He's hitting a little bit different this year. Not striking out as much. And, I mean, his strikeout rate is a little high, but, you know, he's not striking out as much. And he's, you know, lining the ball instead of, like, you know, pulling the ball at Worcester to, you know, to the where the ball flies in right field. So, and he's using his speed. So we'll see. They also have Ryan Fitzgerald, who can play right field as well. He's another left-handed hitter. So we'll see. But yeah, right now I would say it's going to get worse before it gets better because they have a tough homestand here. And I don't see them winning too many games in the near future.
Yeah. Well, I think you just covered every topic I have written down to cover. So
we can just wrap it up, right?
Yeah. You can wrap it up after 4 minutes. I mean, I do want to start with the offense, and we did see a shakeup the other day, you know, not a surprising one, but you know, Friday afternoon before the Baltimore series, Travis Shaw is DFA'd, which, you know, he was 0-19. I don't think he had one hit or two hits in spring training, right? Like he was 0-20 to start spring training. Yeah. And then
he made the team at the end. Yeah.
Yeah. And made the team only because they really didn't have any better options. And so Franchi Cordero comes up. Travis Shaw is now a free agent. But that's kind of like, to me, you know, rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic, because really the problem at first base is Bobby Dalbec. I mean, this has been, I think, you know, there's obviously a lot of guys who are hitting in the hundreds. There's a lot of guys who have struggled. But for Bobby Dalbec to really, you know, and what we've all talked about is a make or break year for him with Costas coming up. Here are the numbers: hitting 147. I think he has one homer, 3 RBIs, 213 on base percentage, which is just dismal, and a 448 OPS. The Red Sox rank, you know, last in baseball in OPS at the first base position. I mean, it's just, do you see like this being the end of Bobby Dalbec almost? I mean, do you see maybe them optioning him and just going with Costas moving forward? I mean, how long is the leash going to be here?
I don't think that they'll go with Costas right away, just because, you know, when he comes up, they'd expect him to be an everyday player. And yeah, he just hasn't hit against lefties recently. You know, he's 3-22. I think this year, all 10 of his extra base hits in Worcester have come against righties. I'd have to go back and look at his numbers last year against lefties. I don't think that they were, you know, exceptional. And so they probably want him to develop a little bit more. I mean, we saw what happened last year when they kind of rushed Duran out of necessity. It didn't work. And that's what happens when you rush prospects out of necessity, is sometimes just doesn't work. So like you can be trying to get rid of, you know, you think, well, it's good to get rid of this bat, but you know, the bat that's coming in isn't going to do much better. And it's also going to maybe stunt his growth if, you know, if he's rushed too quick. So I would give it a little bit more time with this first base. You know, obviously Dalbec started off really bad last year. I don't know. I don't think it was this bad.
For it to be this bad, but yeah, it wasn't.
I mean, I think it all goes back to And, you know, I'm not blaming the hitting coaches. It might be analytics that's telling them to, you know, I mean, their chase rate, they're swinging at everything, even swinging at strikes. So that just means they're swinging at everything. They're swinging first pitch. And so I think, you know, they need to figure out something with that because, like, you know, there's too many talented hitters, as I wrote the other day, like for this team not to be, you know, for this team to be scoring 3 point something runs per game and then like 2 point something over the last, like, you know, 2 weeks.
Right.
I mean, you've got Kike's a lot better hitter than what he's shown.
Mm-hmm. 195 right now.
I mean, this guy had 20 something home runs last year. Yeah, I know the Verdugo's numbers are a little deceiving, like Red Sox stats on Twitter posted out, like what his expected batting average and slugging percentage would have been on the road trip and what it was. And so maybe he's getting a little unlucky. He is hitting the ball hard. But there's guys that, like, you'd expect. I mean, like, people are trying to tell me that there's four automatic outs on this team. Well, yeah, maybe there are four automatic outs this year. But if you look at it, there only really should be one automatic out. Yeah. Like, it's, you know.
Well, look, I mean, I'm not really sold on the catching position not being an automatic out. I mean, I think Vasquez is what he is at this point. His line, 220, one homer, four RBIs, 541 OPS, one double. You know, I mean, I just don't think I think he's just a bad hitter at this point, you know. But go ahead.
Yeah, like, how old is Vasquez? Like 31, 32? I don't know, but it's like, yeah, he fell off drastic. Like, he had that
really good year. He'll be 32 in August.
He had a really good year in 2019. He was pretty good in 2020, and then just things fell off offensively. So, like, you know, it's obviously a lot of wear and tear on the body, the catching position, and, you know, that can affect your offense and yada, yada, yada. But you're right. I mean, like, right field and catcher are probably two holes maybe, but I just feel like, you know, I mean, even Christian Arroyo isn't hitting and he should be hitting. I mean, it's not like he's an excellent hitter, but he should be doing a lot better than he is. So I feel like it's the team right now. Even, like, you know, Devers is hitting balls hard. You know, his OPS is in the 700, right? So, like, it's the team. It's not just one or two guys. And so I think that there needs to be something that changes there. Game planning, anything.
There are six guys hitting under 200. Arroyo's at 186, Dahlbeck's at 147, Kike's at 195, Jackie at 147, Plawecki at 150. I guess Franchi's at 143. He'd be the sixth one. That doesn't really count. But
Trevor Story really hasn't hit. But
right. Like, well, that's what I wanted to get to next. You know, Trevor
Story has hit. Like, he has hit some balls hard. But, yeah, I mean, like, you know, it's kind of like weird with him, too.
I give him, you know, more of a break than everybody else just because of the weird start that he had. You know, obviously been well documented, signed late. The signing was a little bit delayed, as they talked about his vaccination status. He then went to Texas for the birth of his child. Then he got, you know, five games of experience in spring training after opening day, had food poisoning or whatever that was, you know, had another weird start. He's been hitting the ball hard, but, you know, the line, you know, is what it is as well. Hitting 217, no homers. You know, he has a handful of doubles, but, you know, no homers to me is kind of concerning. And he struck out, you know, 23 times. And
yeah, the strikeouts are there with him.
23 times and 69 at bats. So, I mean, that to me is maybe a timing thing. I think that, like I said, I give him more of a break just because he didn't have the full spring training. He had that stop and start type of thing. But now it's like, it's May 3rd, you know, it's time to, like, not have that be an excuse anymore. So I would not be surprised if he got going on this homestand or on the road trip next week to Atlanta and Texas. But, you know, that being said, until it happens, you can't really, you know, bet on it. And, you know, we've seen they've tried a lineup switch, moving him to lead off spot, moving Kike down to sixth. We've seen this shakeup at first base. The question for you is, what's the next shakeup? You know, what is going to be the next thing this team tries to dig out of this hole?
That's a good question. I would think probably the most realistic thing right now would be Duran in right field. Just because, as I said, Casas is, like, you know, they would like to see him develop more when you asked Alex Cora if they had considered him, he just gave you a hard no, right? Like, just no. he didn't even say anything about it.
On Friday about Franchi, I said, do you guys consider Tristan? He said, no. And that was the whole answer. So a good journalist would have followed up, but, you know, that's not what we have here.
So I don't know. I mean, can they shake things up? Like, do you make a trade? What do you do? I mean, do you add a start? Like, the starting pitching hasn't been that bad, actually. Nope,
it's been good.
The starting pitching has been good. And then you've got a
thing. Other than Pivetta.
And you've got Sale coming back, and you've got, James Paxton. So, the bullpen's weird to me, too, because especially without Whitlock. With Whitlock, the bullpen was good.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I wanted to get into, because I wrote, it takes a lot for me to write like a column. Is I usually stick, we both, as beat writers, we don't put on the columnist hat that often, unless we really feel passionate about something. And Saturday night, after that horrible, horrible loss to Baltimore, that with the Salamara throwing the ball away and extra innings, I know the takeaway of that game, right? You're losing one, or you're up 1-0 through the whole game. The takeaway again is, you're facing the Orioles and you've scored one run, that is basically why they lost. But with the bullpen short, Alex Cora had to turn to Matt Barnes in the eighth. And Alex said out loud, that was a bloop double and a single for the Orioles to score in that inning. So really not that big of a deal with Barnes, but it's like, I don't really care. He just does not deliver ever. And you can't put him in those spots. And it doesn't matter. Right.
His stuff isn't good.
And it's just like he's kind of making it up as he goes. He's mixing up his pitch mix all the time. He's not, the pitcher he used to be, in any fashion. So I don't really care how it happened. He can't be trusted there. Brazier actually pitches well on the ninth, and then you have Salamara in the 10th, and you lose that game in the throwing error or whatever. That's the perfect window where Whitlock comes in a 1-0 game and gives you the eighth and the ninth, and you get a win. But when he's in the rotation, you don't have that option, and you don't have a day after, Robles pitches not that well. He gave up a homer. Like, then you don't have really anybody. And I think that this is a subject of debate internally with the Red Sox, where, there's people who are going to want Whitlock in the bullpen just because he means so much more to the bullpen. Where does he mean more to the team? Maybe if he gives you more innings out of the rotation, then you look at it and say, well, if he's going to give us more innings that way, then, he's going to make more of an impact. But he's going to affect more games in the bullpen. And for a team that needs to just win games, they need that, I think. And very interesting to see that they're, sticking with him at least for this turn. He'll start tomorrow against the Angels, maybe against Otani, which would be a great matchup. Tanner Houck seems like he's, going to the bullpen. But I just think that, long-term, for years, you probably want Garrett Whitlock as a great starter in your rotation. His contract's built that way. For the rest of this year, or at least until they figure out the bullpen, I think you need him in that group, or you're just going to have to piece it together, and it's not going to be pretty like we saw over the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about that one game, but there was two others on the road trip too. I mean, the one where Hansel Robles gave up, that was in Baltimore or Tampa Bay? I don't even know. They all run together, but
they were all so close, and they were all basically the same game script.
There was a couple of games. There was one in Tampa, and there was one in, there was one in Toronto where they blew leads late. And so, I even tweeted that out. So Whitlock went Thursday, and so I tweeted out actually, why don't you? This would be the best scenario for him right here, whatever. So. I don't know. I look at it I'm Whitlock's great and everything. And so, but right now, what is he doing in the starting rotation? If he's only throwing, if he can only give you 50 to 60 pitches too.
Yeah.
So I guess if they build him up every fifth day, but
right. And I assume that if they're going to keep him in there, then that's going to be the plan. But it's
Valdez is an opener. Yeah. And I guess that too, but Valdez is an opener. Could probably give you three innings at the beginning of a game like he did the other day. And then they have Whitlock for the rest of the, week. I'm just using Valdez as an example.
Yeah. He's no longer on the team. I'm not sure if you heard.
I know. I did know that, but whatever.
It's first reported by Mass Live. Thanks for paying attention.
It's just, I knew it.
Okay.
I'm just saying that there's the other people that can give you that. And if it's only three or four innings and it's every 5 days, that just doesn't help.
I think just there is this kind of thought that Tanner Houck cost him many games on the road trip with being unvaccinated. I do think, as Alex Cora said, I do think it oversimplifies it a little bit to blame a 3-7 road trip on one guy. And, you know, at the end of the day, the Red Sox could do absolutely nothing. Like, they can't force him to get vaccinated. I think they tried to convince him, and they tried to convince Cutter Crawford and everybody. It didn't work out, but the reality of it is that they had to, you know, reshuffle their entire pitching staff because he was going to be missing Toronto. How much blame do you put on Tanner Houck for that road trip?
Well, I see the Yankees, and there was a lot of rumors that some of those guys weren't vaccinated.
Yep, and big names too.
The best team in the AL East right now, and that just shows you they're serious about winning the AL East. That, you know, they got all their guys vaccinated.
Yep, every single one.
No one wanted to miss that Toronto series. I know that a lot of people were like, you know, well, there was all this media talk about just two players that didn't make the trip. But if you look at it on a regular roster, I mean, you know, Houck was so important. And then, you know, you could have in June, late June, you could have Houck, Taylor, Sale, and Crawford if he's still missing it. So that's four guys out of 26, you know. So, like, let's not, like, forget that Sale's unvaccinated and Houck – I mean, and Taylor is a close contact this year, so I'm assuming he's unvaccinated.
Right, and he wasn't last year.
Yeah, and so So I think that yes, you can blame some of that on Houck. I don't know how much you know. I think Alex Spear put out an interesting note, like if your bullpen just comes down to one arm, you know, losing that Whitlock, then you know you have issues to begin with, right?
Yeah, which is so, what we've been saying, or what I've been saying since the end of spring training. I just don't understand.
But I think everybody fits the bullpen better when you have Whitlock in there, and he can pitch, you know, like those final two innings or something. You know, Strom's in a better spot. Diekman's in a better spot. Robles is in a better spot to succeed. So, like, you know, he just makes the bullpen completely better. And yes, I would say that the series loss in Toronto, losing 3 or 4 there, had a good amount to do with, you know, not having Houck there.
I, you know, Carrabas always puts out that, you know, who do I trust in the bullpen, and is always kind of tweeting out that, you know, notes app on his phone. Right now, it's obviously, you know, Whitlock if he's in there. So if he's not, then you take that name out. And I trust Robles and Strom. But beyond that, Brazier's ERA and some of those counting stats are like the most inaccurate representation of how he actually has been, because with inherited runners, he's been horrible. Diekman, you know, you never know what you're going to get on a certain night. You know, I know that early outing in New York stands out, but since then, you know, there's been ups and downs. So to me, I look at Strom and Robles as the guys you want to build that bullpen around. Like, give one of them the ninth, which they kind of do with Robles, but kind of don't. They kind of still do it matchup based. Can't trust Barnes, can't trust Salamara. Austin Davis is okay for what he is. I think Taylor's really fallen out of favor even when he gets back. Obviously, Darwinson Hernandez is not in the mix. You know, like, there's talk about, well, we like these guys, Tyler Danish, John Schreiber. I think they could factor in as different looks, you know, for the rest of the year. It's just like, it's so unbelievably unsettled for a major league bullpen a month into the season. You know, when they haven't made really any progress settling that at all.
You look at Houck, if Whitlock is in the starting rotation,
that's another point.
Guy that you know, he's a guy that you trust out of the bullpen.
Well, so, you need relievers to throw strikes, you know? I mean, like, I know his numbers are good. I know that he's been good in every role they put him in, and he's been effective. But, you know, you look at that the other night. Like, they wanted to piggyback him, you know, Friday night in Baltimore with Rich Hill, and they got, you know, 3 innings out of him, but he walked the guy in every inning. Like, you can't have that if you're a multi-inning reliever. You can kind of deal with it as a starter. I mean, not really, but a little bit. And if he's not going to throw strikes, I mean, you can't have him be your closer or your setup guy or whatever.
Yeah. So, like, I would probably put Strom as the closer right now. I mean, like, he's effective against both lefties and righties. He's throwing him in 90s, and, you know, he doesn't walk too many batters. So, like, I would probably go with him and put Robles in the 8th or the 7th, 8th, whatever.
But, I mean, just, okay, like, let's break this down even further. So I agree that Strom's good, and I wrote, you know, a very long thing about them signing him and how he got on the radar with the bullpen that he threw in Arizona, you know, right after the lockout. So your bullpen is so unsettled that you are deciding on your closer between a guy that you didn't know anything really about until you went and saw him throw a 20-pitch bullpen in Arizona a week before spring training started and then signed. And Robles, who you didn't sign until, you know, obviously they had him last year, but didn't sign until a week before spring training was over. And then, you know, he didn't really pitch in spring training because of visa issues. Like, they're fine. They've been good. But the fact that those are the guys that you're relying on so much right now just speaks to, I think, the fact that they dropped the ball in the bullpen as a whole.
There were guys out there, you know, there were guys out there and they didn't get them. And so I don't really understand the approach of Blooms with this bullpen, you know, building it in the offseason. Yeah, I mean, there were several guys like, you know, Colin McHugh who could have made a difference, you know. So there was a lot of guys out there.
Well, I think with him, I think they wanted him, and I don't think he enjoyed the first go around here. So
gotcha. Even though he was here for like 2 weeks and like
Well, as I always say, he spent 3 hours with the Red Sox, and one of them was spent in the Fenway Rundown podcast. So that was nice.
Yeah. So yeah. So like, you know, like so, you know, I don't know. I mean, do you go out and get a reliever at this point? It's tough to do. I don't know. Like, what do you do? I mean, you look at some of the guys that are in the minors, Franklin. German is, you know, he likes to be called Franklin. Some people call him Frank German, whatever. And he's a double A right now, 15 strikeouts, zero walks. He throws 98 to 99, like out of the bullpen. I mean, he's an effective reliever. You've got Zach Kelly, who's, you know, been pretty good at Worcester. There's other guys, you know, AJ Politi. Am I saying that last name right? Whatever. He's been very effective in double A, and he's a arm that everybody was talking about before last season. He went and started, and he wasn't that successful as a starter last year. They put him in the bullpen towards the end of the year, and he was really good, and he's continued it this year. Both him and German have been awesome out of that Portland bullpen. So there are guys, maybe you take a chance here and you bring up German, or, you know, Connor Siebold is a guy that can go two or three. And, you know, take that Whitlock job. I've heard from somebody that in the organization that his you know, fastball velocity is between 91 and 94. It's mostly 92 and 93, which, you know, that was pretty much what he was when they traded for him. And, you know, he's a good guy with a really good changeup and stuff. And so his numbers have been really good in Worcester, batting average against like one something. And so maybe you promote him. Although you don't have much starting pitching depth right now, and he is starting pitching depth, so you'd have to keep him stretched out in some sort of way that you kept Whitlock stretched out.
Yeah, I mean, they're just I get back to it. Like, this May 3rd, and we're talking about, you know, Frank German. Like, that, okay, great, you know, and he could be good, you know, and I know you're high on him and he's pitched well, but, like, they shouldn't be in this boat. So, no, that's kind of where I stand with that. We'll wrap up here talking about, you know, what's next. And as I wrote, you know, obviously – they had a really tough start to the season in terms of the schedule, you know, Yankee Stadium to start and then Detroit, which I know they haven't played well, but that's a team a lot of people thought, you know, were going to be good this year. They hadn't, obviously, then the homestand Minnesota's, you know, get a lot of talent, actually. And then two series with the Blue Jays, play the Rays on the road. You had a quote unquote layup in Baltimore over the weekend, and you are only able to win, you know, one of the three. But now this homestand, you get the Angels, who have been really, really hot. We know about the talent. It's not just like, you know, the sideshow of Ohtani and Trout. It's like a really good team. Syndergaard, you know, going in the opener, and he's been good so far. Then you have the White Sox, who are kind of in the same boat as you. You have a team that's, you know, very talented, made the postseason last year, but has not been very good so far. You know, they need to start turning things around. They're going to be motivated over the weekend at Fenway. And then you'll be there next week for two games in Atlanta, your first trip ever to Truist Park, which is very nice. Congrats. And, you know, that's the defending champions before they end that road trip in Texas. But, I mean, this is the American League. There's a lot of good teams. You know, you're going to see next, even on the next homestand, Houston and Seattle, who, you know, Houston speaks for itself. Seattle's kind of, you know, a fringe contender, too. So, it's just, there's not a lot of breaks in the schedule. And if you can't beat up on the Baltimores, then you're in trouble. What do you need to see out of the Red Sox, let's say, in this 8-game stretch against the Angels, the White Sox, and the Braves? Obviously, you know, increased offense, all that type of stuff. But what do they need to win? 5 games, 6 games to kind of jump back into this? I know they don't look at the things in this fashion, but we do. So what do you need there?
Yeah, I think you need six. Like, so, you know, there's 2-3 game series here against the Angels and Chicago,
yep,
as you said. And they've got 2 in Atlanta, and then are you counting Texas in that too? Texas, you know, so like they've got to win that series in Texas.
Yep.
They should split in Atlanta. And this is, I mean, they have to win like 2 or 3 against the White Sox. I mean, I'm saying they have to. It's still very early, but, right, you know, like to get back on track. I think this series is going to be difficult for them. I see them winning 1 of 3 against the Angels.
Yeah. And, you know, you have Ohtani and Syndergaard going, you know, Ohtani, I don't think it's official yet just because he was hurt the other day and they're reshuffling things with Syndergaard. But, you know, probably between, you know, when we tape this and when we put it out, you know, the Ohtani news will break.
You think the Rangers would be another layup next week, but, you know, 8-14, but it's like, you know, you had a layup in,
and they never Baltimore, really play well and, down, you know, there. Offense, you know, last year, yeah, they lost exactly 3 or 4 there.
Yep. And your offense just, you know, couldn't get it going against the Baltimore pitching staff, you know, in that ballpark and everything. I know they pushed the fences
ballpark, back a little bit. The ballpark is very different than it used to be.
Yeah, that's true. But still, I mean, like, you know, that's a place you usually score a bunch of runs because, you know, of the pitching down there. And you just didn't do anything. You couldn't get your offense going. That's what I thought. Like, when they went to Baltimore, like, that will get their offense going, right?
Right. And a kid making his major league debut in the series opener.
Exactly. And they score, like, you know, they scored 4 runs in, or was it 5 runs in the first 27 innings of that series. Yep. It was ridiculous.
Right. And JD breaking them out with that grand slam and garbage time made things look a little bit better than
garbage time.
Exactly. We'll end with this. I mean, you know, Ohtani obviously is a transcendent superstar. It's different than anything, you know, we've seen in our lifetimes. And I saw him pitch last year in Anaheim, and it was hilarious because I think the first night of the series in Anaheim, the Angels gave away a Shohei Ohtani pillow and to every fan, or the first 30,000 fans, and it was like packed and absolutely, you know, everybody was there to try to get the pillow. And the next night he pitched and it was like only 12,000, 13,000 people there. So it shows you that people are, you know, so much more interested in a stupid gimmick than, you know, actually going and seeing greatness. But it feels like, you know, and this is kind of rare in today's game, but it feels like an event, you know, coming in, you know, where we've been talking about it for the last few days. You've written about it once or twice, like Ohtani's going to pitch at Fenway. This is an event, you know, this is an event. And I think that's great for the game. Do you feel like, you know, that's kind of one of those games you circle on the calendar over the course of a long 162?
Yeah, there's not much of that, obviously, in baseball. We see it more with, you know, basketball, LeBron James coming to town, or,
yep,
you know, Kevin Durant or something. You know, like, there's always, like, in the, they're about their league of star power. And, you know, maybe there's not extremely great personalities, and I'm not talking about Ohtani. I'm more talking about Trout. He's not, like, the most personal. Like, he's a very nice guy, but he's just not, like, a flashy type player that's, like, you know, David Ortiz and some of those guys in that era that,
yep, Jeter, A-Rod, Nomar, all that stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And so, like, you could argue that, you know, he's the best player we might ever see, but it's just not like, you know, going to see somebody like, you know, David Ortiz back in the day, you know? So, yep, like, Ohtani brings that. I was at the All-Star game last year. It was like, you know, everybody was writing Ohtani stories. It was fun. You know, he got in the home run derby. You know, he was the starting pitcher. He was doing the press conference then the day before. And so there was a lot of Ohtani hype, and rightfully so, obviously. And, you know, so I think he's great for baseball. But like, I don't know how much hype there's going to be around Fenway Park, because I don't know how much baseball fans look at that as opposed to, like, you know, with basketball. Oh, you know, as I said, LeBron James is coming to town. If you look on StubHub, the ticket's going to be $1 million.
Yeah, well, Dave and Jeannie Cotillo will be in the house for the Ohtani.
That's the most important thing.
Right, of course. So, you know, we're a quality over quantity type of place here at the Fenway Rundown. That's Chris Smith. I'm Chris Cotillo. We'll have you covered from Fenway this week before Chris heads on the road to Atlanta and Texas. And as always, thanks for listening.